The virtual CISO moment is brought to you by vCISO Services, a leading provider of quality and experienced virtual chief information security officers for small and mid-sized businesses. Check them out at vcisoservices.com. Hi, I'm Greg Schaefer, and welcome to the virtual CISO moment. Michael Lines joins us today. He is CISO for Open Technology Solutions, an expert in developing and leading information security and risk programs for organizations ranging from global enterprises to SaaS startups, and is authoring a book, Heuristic Risk Management, Why Most Risk Management is Ineffective and What to Do About It. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Greg. Happy to be here.
Happy to be here. And I guess I got to say happy to be here again for the third time because we had two issues with starting to record, but it looks like everything's working now. So wonderful.
Cross our fingers.
So I would love to hear your story starting from the beginning of how you got into IT and cybersecurity and what led you ultimately to writing the book. We'll get into the book details a little bit later, but let's hear about your path.
Sure. So my information security path, not my IT path, which has about another 20 years before the start of my information security path, started in 1999 while working for Exodus, building and leading their managed security services function. So that was my first introduction to security as a full-time role. From there, after the dot-com explosion, went off to become a CIO for a startup here in the Denver area. They were acquired by FICO or Fair Isaac at the time, which is basically the company that does credit scoring, convinced mm-hmm. them that they needed to have a CISO because they did not have one at the time. So I became their first CISO. From there, progressed on to TransUnion, where I was their first CISO. From there, went on to PricewaterhouseCoopers, PwC, and became their global CISO for PricewaterhouseCoopers worldwide. And did that for many years. From there, went to D&H, became their CISO. So needless to say, I've had lots of CISO experience. Mm-hmm. And along the way, I've also led the advisory practices in governance, risk, and compliance for companies such as Optiv, such as Online Business Systems out of Canada. So I've had the opportunity to look at information security from both the practitioner side and the consulting side, and got a lot of exposure to a lot of different organizations and how they are structuring and managing their information security programs and the troubles and the failings they're having doing so.
So currently you are working in the financial services space as far as the credit union space, is that correct?
That's correct. I'm actually the CISO for five organizations at OTS because OTS is what is called a CUSO, a credit union service organization. So I am the CISO for ourselves, a sister CUSO that does more back-end processing, as well as three credit unions across the United States.
So, okay, just to pivot a little bit, the CUSO concept, and I first became aware of that when I met you actually at a conference mm-hmm. last year in Houston. Credit Union Service Organization, that's what it stands for?
That's what it stands for. It's actually a legal designation. It is actually a thing legally, just like a corporation is a thing.
And is it just limited to security and information technology, or do they offer services across the board for credit unions?
Services across the board, which is actually what our sister CUSO does. They do call center operations, loan processing, mortgage processing, things like that for the credit unions, whereas OTS does all of the IT services for the credit unions.
That's fascinating. And I wish that I dove into that a little bit more at the conference last year, because I mean, I do work for some credit for a couple of credit unions, but our field, we are not industry specific. So my company, we work across multiple verticals, but that's fascinating. I appreciate the additional information. To kind of paraphrase Johnny Carson back in the day, I did not know that.
There you go. Learn something new.
Well, on this whole path, and you can limit this to credit unions if you want this, the answer to this question, or if it's something broader, that's fine too. What do you think is a significant threat in information/cybersecurity now to small and mid-sized businesses?
I would say the sophistication of the attackers and obviously the resources available to small and mid-sized organizations to counter those threats. what information security was 20 years ago when I got started has significantly evolved from what it is today, both in terms of the regulatory requirements, the technologies in place, the threats we're having to deal with. And for larger organizations, obviously, they've had to scale in order to meet that demand. For smaller organizations, they're still behind the eight ball in terms of having sufficient resources to be able to be even aware of the problems, let alone be able to focus on doing something about them, which is really what drove me to write the book on heuristic risk management. Heuristic being obviously a term that focuses on what is a good enough solution to a problem. And that is what I am focused on, is what is a good enough risk management program for really focused on small, mid-sized businesses, but actually even large businesses as well, that I've seen go off the rails, if you will, in terms of implementing ineffective risk management programs.
Well, let's pivot into that, because I find that fascinating. I'm a fan of, I think the quote is attributed to Voltaire, but I might be even mispronouncing that. But the perfect is the enemy of the good, I think. Correct. Is the quote. Mm-hmm. And you often see that in risk management. I think back to when I was a network director at a university, and we were putting in fiber to a building, and we always had to do it in conduit. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you put it in conduit, and then you encase the conduit in concrete. And that way, if you had a backhoe coming, it wouldn't it'd be harder to breach the fiber. And for this particular building, the CFO of the university declined my request for the additional funds for the concrete. And I'm like, well, okay, if something bad happens, it's not my fault. But I had the problem of not, I was trying to go for the perfect and not the pragmatic. I like to use the term pragmatic information security, which it sounds like that this is what you're talking about here. So let's dive into it a little bit more. Sure. First of all, why is most risk management ineffective?
Because I think we've lost sight of the forest for the trees, if you will. I've seen so many risk management programs that focus on the minutiae of, let's take every asset within the organization. Let's consider this table of 27 different risks relative to this particular asset. And let's ask everybody in the company to give their subjective opinion about the risk for these 27 different areas for that particular asset. And then let's compile all of that together into a giant, massive spreadsheet, have this enormous heat graph. And at the end of the day, I mean, you've been breached for 2 years by APTs and
you never knew it.
You never knew it. Exactly. Right. So there's way too much focus on the perfect, if to use your analogy, than the pragmatic and the practical, which is at the end of the day, are you implementing the core functions that you need to protect your organization? And what those core functions are very well defined if you manage to focus on them. However, you often see organizations saying, well, okay, we've got an information security problem. What's the most comprehensive framework that we can adopt to solve the information security problem that we've got? So let's go with FISMA. Let's go with NIST 853 and the entire NIST suite of controls. Let's go to ISO, you know, and not only ISO 27-2, let's go for ISO 27001 registration. And all this effort is built upon implementing every control and all the processes associated with these controls. And again, at the end of the day, you're being the attackers aren't waiting around for you to get all your ducks in a row. You're going to be breached because you have too many things to manage, too many processes in place, and you're not focusing on the fundamentals. And I've seen this over and over again, not only in my own personal experience, but what you read in the news. I mean, Bank of America, major Fortune 500 organizations that spend millions, if not tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions on their information security program, and they're breached because, you know, some asset they were hardly even aware of wasn't patched in a timely fashion. So it's great that you have, you know, all these certifications, all these people, but if they're not doing the right thing, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. And that ultimately goes back to what I see as the fundamental paradigm shift that people need to make, and that is to realize you're in a war. This isn't a compliance issue. This isn't a legal issue. There's bullets flying your way. There's firebombs being thrown against the building, And if all you do is walk into the building and say, how'd that hole get in that window? You know, what are the scorch marks on the wall? Gee, I need to scrub them down and realize there is somebody actively out there attempting to do you harm. And until you shift your thinking to say, okay, they're attempting to do me harm, how am I going to prevent them from accomplishing that objective? Then I think you're ultimately not going to be successful.
So there's a term that I sometimes use, and you've probably heard it too, security theater. Mm-hmm. And the way I like to define it is basically you're doing stuff just to look like you're doing something. And why that popped into my head in the beginning of the conversation on this, you talked about the risk assessment, getting all your SMEs together and getting this huge matrix, and you come out with this heat map. And you basically, I've seen risk assessments for clients that we start with that have like fake math. You have all these numbers and all these categories and all these things, and they put it through some sort of magic thing, and you come out with this number, and it's absolutely meaningless. But it looks like that you've done so much work. And I have to say, I'm a consultant, and so I feel bad about saying this, but probably a consultant put that together, because but at the end, I mean, and you try to unspool that and get to something more, more
practical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's dig in a little bit more. Let's just talk about risk assessments for a moment. What is a good way for a small mid-sized business? I mean, this can apply to all businesses, but particularly the SMBs that really have, some of them have no clue about the threat environment. Some still subscribe to the idea, hey, I've got a firewall, or I've got a managed service. Everything is cool. You know, I got everything on Office 365. They can take care of the security. Everything's cool.
Right.
Never consider cybersecurity, information security as risk management. What's a good place for them to start?
Well, I like to, I'm promoting, obviously, the idea that you should think about it at three levels. Think about it at the strategic level, at the tactical level, and at the operational level. Again, in the framework of you're in a battle, how are you going to, if not win the battle, at least protect yourself in the middle of the battle? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be difficult, and there's no complicated math associated with it. But I mean, strategically, understand that you're in a war, who your adversaries are, what they're after, and what are the means that they're going to be using to get what they're after. So that if you have that fundamental understanding, and you can educate your business leaders on that fundamental understanding, that basically sets the strategic framework.
But that's a big if, though. I'm sorry for interrupting, but the second part, if you can educate the business leaders on this, that's a little hard to do, isn't it?
Well, I think it's unusual because they're not used to hearing about security in that regard. They're used to hearing about security and compliance terms. You know, we need this technology. We need to implement this control. But basically, if you start from the strategic level, then you're basically framing the conversation in terms of why before you get to the what, and then lastly, get to the how.
So if finishing up on strategic before going to tactical, it sounds like that the person who's likely the CISO or the virtual CISO or somebody who's like got a skin in the game, or I shouldn't say that because everybody has skin in the game, but who's responsible for the security program needs to be not only able to understand the threats, but to effectively communicate it to senior management. Correct.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, I think that's a core skill for any successful CISO is you've got to be able to talk in business terms. And if you talk in business terms in terms of the threat, I think you're more likely to get a receptive audience than basically talking technology and controls and frameworks. You'll get to that, but you've got to frame it in terms of the why. And the why is the fact that we're being attacked. These are the people that are attacking us. This is what they're after. Here's case examples of what they've done to other organizations in our industry using these tactics. Then, okay, well, how can we prevent? Should lead to the question of, okay, I don't want that to happen. How do we prevent that from happening to us?
And this is the tactical now.
That gets into the tactical.
Okay.
Correct. And then here at the tactical, I'm very much a fan of the bottom-up approach, where you're focusing on what are the core fundamentals. So there are frameworks available that are not the 500 different controls, that do not have the voluminous audit requirements, but basically allow you to establish a solid foundation on which to build an information security program. And if nothing else, you need to maintain that foundation before you do anything else. So we're talking about things like the Center for Internet Security, the CIS Top 18, used to be the Top 20, the Essential 8 from the UK. All of these are basically starters that if you do those and you do those well, you're probably 90% better than most organizations that are PCI compliant, that are HIPAA compliant, because I can tell you, being in those organizations, the bureaucracy and the paperwork required to maintain those programs is sometimes overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And as a result of the overwhelming focus on process, you lose sight of the objective, which is, do we know what our assets are? Are they patched? Do we know who has access to them? Are they being backed up? Do we have the appropriate controls to protect them? All these different fundamentals are being neglected quite often because there's too much work being devoted on, well, what's the next audit? What are the next audit requirements? It's a balance. And so I think people have lost sight of the fundamentals, focusing on the compliance.
Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second because I love doing it.
Sure.
We have CISO churn. Mm-hmm. Where a CISO typically, I don't know, it depends on who you talk to or what study, but let's just say between 18 and 36 months. I think mm-hmm. 36 months is a stretch. 18 and 30 months is the average tenure for a CISO. And a lot of times they'll come in, they'll evaluate, they'll recommend to the C-suite, it's like, hey, if you buy this tool, it will solve all of your risk. And they get to the point of convincing the C-suite and the board of directors to pony up the money, they get it in, mm-hmm. and by the time that they see that they don't have the ROI that was necessarily promised, they're still getting breached, they still have issues, but they can see it, you know, the fact that they're breached better, I guess, then the CISO is left, and you almost wash, rinse, and repeat. So it sounds like that what you're telling me is that let's tell the SMB senior management less about relying upon some sort of a tool to fix your problem, more about processes and understanding your environment.
Processes and objectives. And then once you understand what you're trying to achieve, how are you going to achieve it, then it's really a tool is a tool is a tool. I mean, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, this vulnerability scanning tool or that vulnerability scanning tool. I mean, you know, it's like, do you like chocolate or you don't like vanilla? They're both ice cream. They're both good. I'll eat them both. And at the end of the day, you can still achieve the objective with practically any tool that's a leader in a particular space. And if you don't get wrapped up on, well, this is the silver bullet that's going to solve all of our problems. And as you say, when the CISO turnover occurs, well, that project gets put on the shelf because there's nobody driving it anymore. The next CISO comes in and it's like, well, if that was vanilla. Vanilla sucks. I like chocolate. So we're going to do the chocolate solution. And then they implement a whole new framework, a whole new approach, a whole new technology. I mean, I can't count the organizations that I've gone into that have reams of shelfware, for lack of a better word, you know, partially implemented solutions, partially documented solutions, staff that don't know what they're supposed to be doing, because it's like, well, what's the flavor of the day? Are we supposed to be doing this? Are we supposed to be doing that? And it's like, stop. What are you attempting to achieve? Right. How well are you achieving it? And then let's basically then look at our suite of tools and say, okay, before we go off and buy something new, figure out what we've got, figure out what the problem is we're trying to solve, and then build upon that.
That made me think, you're right. It's like when we go into organizations, I've gone in the initial call, and there has been some of that, a lot more than there should be of, well, we tried this and it didn't really work. Or the previous person said that this, but then they left and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of wasted time, money, and probably most importantly, opportunity. So that's the first statement mm-hmm. I wanted to make. The second statement I wanted to make is that I prefer strawberry. So I'm just going to say that. Right now. But now this kind of like leads now into talking more details about operational. So, yep. So how does that work?
So if you think about, okay, you understand who your enemy is or your adversary, you understand how they're going to attack you, what they're after, the means of attack, then you can understand, okay, let's build a foundational program to prevent these attacks from occurring, or at least be able to prevent, detect, and respond to these attacks. Mm-hmm. Then when it comes to the operational side, there is obviously the programs that you need, the projects you need to be able to implement the technologies, the processes, and so on. and the organization, the staffing, let's not forget that. But then there's the operational side. And again, this goes back to the things that I see neglected in organizations so often. And I look at operational from the perspective of KPIs. So if you're implementing controls, what are the KPIs associated with those controls? And are you managing and monitoring them? Vulnerability management is the perfect test case for that. You know, what is your patching standard based on criticality? Are you following it? Because, you know, I'm sure you've had the experience, you walk into organizations and they've got things that are unpatched for years going back in the back in the past, and they're critical patches. So it doesn't matter if you have a program, doesn't matter if you have a tool, if you're not managing the objective, you're effectively, you know, creating a facade, as you said, security theater. Oh, look, we're doing all this work, but we've got patches that are multi-years old that are critical within our environment. We've got obsolete systems and technologies that are multi, you know, versions back within our environment. Unless you address those fundamentals and you have KPIs to measure and track that, and that's what you report up to management, that's the real measure of the effectiveness of your program across those critical controls as you define what those critical controls are. Secondarily, I mean, that's one component of operational risk management. Another component of operational risk management is obviously the testing that you need to be doing on an ongoing basis. So you should be doing penetration testing. You should have third-party assessments of your program to basically say, okay, what are the gaps that I haven't seen yet? And, okay, once you've identified those, whether it's from a formal audit, from a SOC 2, from a penetration test or whatever, that is going to produce findings. Those findings need to go into a risk register, and that risk register then becomes the way that you prioritize things, the gaps, if you will, in your program, whether they were discovered externally, whether they were discovered internally, whether they were discovered by incidents. You had an incident, it's like, aha, got a hole over there, that's not working, or I haven't have an appropriate process, technology, or control in that place to prevent that. That's another item that goes into both your program roadmap and your risk register to solve. And then lastly, there's another very neglected item I see in most information security programs, and that is security exceptions and managing security exceptions, which is the formal acknowledgement of risk that exists within the environment. Obsolete systems, again, is the test case for this. I mean, how often have you walked into an environment, they've got Windows 2008 or Windows 2003 servers, depending on how far back you go, and it's like, well, it's a critical application, we can't upgrade it, or it's going to cause operational downtime, or we can't afford it, or whatever. And it's like, great. There's a hell of a lot of risk there. Here's the type of risk associated with that because of the vulnerabilities that are not being addressed. But let's at least put it on paper. Let's acknowledge it. Let's have a risk rating associated with it. Likelihood high, impact high. Okay. Here, Mr. Business Owner, please sign off on this as a security exception so that when we get breached and we get sued, I can pull this out and say, see, he said.
And that I'm so glad that you went down that path to the exception part of it, because I was going to draw us into that if not, because that is, I often will say, the primary responsibility of a CISO or a VCISO, if you will, to, and you know, depending upon how you wanted it worded, but to provide the necessary and complete information about the threat and control environment so that the C-suite and the board of directors can make risk-informed decisions in relation to information security.
Absolutely.
And that's where it ends. It's like you can have a risk, you can have vulnerabilities that have not been patched. You can list out and document your compensating controls for it. You can render a risk opinion. The only, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the only, I don't know if liability is the right word, but let's just stick with that. The only liability the CISO, the VCISO, the risk manager, whomever is providing this information, is that they better be very, very well informed and very effective and very good in risk management, because if they don't understand the risk, then they are not doing their job. Their job is not to fix it. Their job is to communicate the risk.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, what I think the word you're looking for is do care. And we need to be able to have the you as a CISO demonstrate that you are providing the appropriate due care of the environment, of the information, of the PII and so forth that exists within it, so that when something happens, that you are aware of it, you've at least formally acknowledged that it's maybe on your backlog to do something about. But that, I think, is the expression of due care. Due care does not mean there is no problems within the environment. Every hole is fixed, every problem is fixed, every technology is implemented. Due care says you at least understand your environment enough that you have a plan to get to it at an appropriate point in the future, and it's been prioritized based on business needs. And maybe that 2008 system is not getting patched because you don't have the money to do it. But at least you've acknowledged that that risk exists. The business acknowledges that the risk exists. And you're going to be in a lot better position when you're being deposed as to why the thing happened and you didn't do something about it. We knew about it. We were working on it. Here it is, formally acknowledged, and this is our roadmap, and this is where it fit within our roadmap. Now, did we maybe not prioritize it appropriately? That's a judgment call, but at least you're making a judgment and not just being exposed.
And if it's defensible, if you can defend your opinion and say, this is why I made that judgment, that goes a long way as well, too.
Yep, absolutely.
So all this stuff, being a CISO, being a virtual CISO, all of that, and also being a writer and working on a book, trying to get it out. I know that that can be very stressful. I know because I'm working on the third edition of this.
I've got that on my bookshelf. Yes. Right.
Do you really? Oh, yes. I know where you got it from. Yeah. That's right. But there's a lot of stress involved in all that, particularly with writing, because you want to make sure that you have it just right. You want to say it right. I can't tell you how many times that I edit it. What is, quickly, one thing that you like to do to decompress, to get away from everything cyber? Or you don't?
I don't think it's possible, unfortunately, because you're always on call. I'm always receiving text messages, alerts, emails at all hours of the day. So I wish I could say there was an isolation booth I could go into, but, you know, it's always there.
But if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
That's true. And I do love what I do. I mean, I can't envision a role that has more challenges than being a CISO.
I often like to say, and I think a lot of folks won't agree with me on this, but that's okay, because I'm of the age right now where it's just like, I just say what I say. that if you have a job that causes you to lose sleep, you might want to think about a different job. And what I'm talking about is that I absolutely hate the saying, you know, well, what keeps you up at night? Nothing. It's like I enjoy what I do. So, okay. So, future plans. First of all, when is Heuristic Risk Management coming out?
My target is by the end of this year. My target last year was by the end of last year. However, this thing called being a CISO for 5 organizations sort of caused me to reprioritize my time. But now things have stabilized. I think we've got a good program in place. We've got a fantastic team in place. And we've got the core technologies we need to move forward with. So it's freeing up the time that I can refocus on this. And my goal for myself and any listeners out there who are anxiously awaiting it is by the end of this year. And it'll be you'll see it on Amazon within a month or two for pre-order.
Awesome. Please let me know when that's about to come out, because I will mention it here, of course. Would love to maybe come back in about a year or so and talk more about the book and all of that and how it's all going and everything. So
I would love it.
Awesome. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us today, Michael. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your patience and grace in the user error on my part for trying to start the recording for this, but everything worked out well.
Absolutely. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Greg.
All right, everybody, stay secure.